Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now! Productions, one of the few black radio networks that address solutions for the black community, presents Black Urban America. All you guys that are listening by laptop, if you want to call in, the call-in number is 516-531-9540. That's 516-531-9540. And if you have a question or a comment, press 1, and I will chime you in. Again, press 1, I will chime you in. The lineup for this week, as always, Tuesdays, tonight, we have Black Urban America, and you have myself as the host. My name is Kenny Jones. On Wednesday, we have The Cutting Edge with Michonne. On Thursday, we have The Part of Harlem by Wayne A. Young. And finish up the week on Saturdays, we have Provocative Thought by Carlton Steen. All shows begin at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All shows begin at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Now, if you want to listen to other shows in our archives, all you have to do is go to the We Talk Productions Facebook page. If you want information about We Talk, all you got to do is go to We Talk Productions, our website, We Talk Productions. /teams. Tonight we have a very special guest, and we're going to be covering all type of issues concerning our history. Tonight we have the lecturer from the University of Wisconsin and Milwaukee. He's a historian and a researcher. Also, he's like me. You know, he's a radio host, and he has a Black Reality think tank, which I listened to a couple of those past shows. It's very, very informative and enlightening. And also, he's the executive director of the Sankofa Historical Society. And I'd like to welcome tonight the esteemed, the honorable Professor William Rogers. Good evening, sir.
Hotep, my brother. How are you this evening?
Hotep, back at you. How you doing
yes,
this
sir.
Evening?
Thank you so much for inviting me on. I really appreciate it. I'm honored. And I'm humbled.
Hey, I'm honored to have you to give us the time. And you know what? I didn't know your show was on Tuesday night. We could have made arrangements, you know, switch to another night, you know, to have this show. But I'm very honored for you to come on the show and give us some of your some of your information and your perspective on our history, how important our history is to us. And I'd like to introduce you to the host of The Cutting Edge. She's on the line, and she's my co-host, Michonne Williams. This is Professor Rogers.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you doing? How are you?
I'm great. It's nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you, too. It's a pleasure and honor to be here.
All right, let's get into it. Why is our history so important to the development, to our development as a people.
Okay. And that's a wonderful starting position to have. The history of African people in America is a very unique, dynamic, and powerful occurrence. And it warrants that we never forget, you know, that past. We never forget that journey of our ancestors. I think one of the best replicas of understanding that is the song by James Weldon Johnson called Lift Every Voice. But
yes.
Basically, Dr. Carter G. Woodson really is the forefront of the ideology and ideas and the philosophy of why our history is important. There's a
great author. Great author. Great author.
Yes, he is. Yes.
And let me ask you, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You know, even though this was written in 1947, the miseducation of the Negro, you could change the year to 2021 and call it African American, and everything in it pertains to today. How come our educators? I mean, I have teachers on the show all the time, as Michonne could contest, and I always ask them, how come our curriculum is not more Afrocentric?
That's exactly right. Well, again, that's a part of that journey that we've come on. One of the things that Carter Woodson said in the book, The Miseducation of Negro, that I always like to use, he says, if a race has no history, it has no worthwhile tradition. Mm. It becomes a negligible factor in the thought of the world, and it stands in danger of being exterminated. And so I think that very clearly explains why we must continue to promote our history. There are people that don't want us to do that. Our history has been corrupted. It has been omitted. There have been sins of commission and all kinds of things done because of the greatness of who we were.
Hello?
And
Professor?
So I think that's why we need to talk about it. And we need to talk about it 365 days a year, not just 1 month.
Ain't that the truth? Now, since you said that, now, I have my own perspective on this question, okay?
Okay.
And I think I know where you're going to go when I ask this question. Do the black man in America history starts with slavery?
Oh, definitely not. We've got thousands of years of history prior to slavery. You know, very clearly, slavery is just an incident. Our history begins with actually the beginning of the world.
Right.
The planet Earth, the inhabitants of the planet Earth are African people.
That's right. And that's fact. And even the researchers and white historians do confess to that, even though they don't want to, but they confess to that.
That's right. And they've written about it. They know it's true. All of their science people that are supposed to be experts, you know, all of them, right on even up to the biologists, you know, who studied genetics, know
right.
that our history is the beginning of the world.
Well, why do America, now you just said that it's unique, our history is unique and dynamic. We should promote our history by history been damaged, and has been stepped on, it has been watered down, and our history start with the beginning of the world. How come do you feel that America does not want us to know that?
English-speaking America, its history began it with the enslavement and the captivity of African people. When the pilgrims, the so-called pilgrims, landed here in the 1600s, which was already an occupied piece of land. It wasn't, they didn't discover it. It was already discovered and being occupied and being worked. But when they got here, they started from there with the captivity of other people. And you have to remember that those were religious dissidents. These were people that were reading the Bible and talking about God and talking about all men are born equal. So they needed to make sure that this captivity system didn't appear like they were being cruel. It would appear in a way that it would be that they are helping people, like they do all the time when they conquer somebody. They go in and they'll conquer a nation and say that we were going in to save the people. Well,
at first they come with the Bible, and then they come with the military, and then when you see the McDonald's, you're done.
What even
the
one before
has
that?
Been conquered.
You see Coca-Cola. When you see Coca-Cola,
right. Yeah. McDonald's and Coca-Cola, right? Yes. I'm sorry to interrupt you, sir. Go ahead.
That's okay. That's okay. That's all right. But anyway, that justification, because the question became for Europe or English, is why are you doing this? This is a cruel system. Why are you in Britain? Now, captivity of human beings was a global activity long before that. But it was done for different reasons in different places. But in English America, the idea was to capture the people, the inhabitants, and make this system so that it was perpetual, that it would be perpetual, genetically, and justified. And so in order to do that, everything, every step that you take has to be restructured, rethought out. You have to make the Bible say it. You have to make God say that was okay.
And and you have to say that God said to make you slaves. God sent us to conquer you so you will no longer be savages, and you have to follow our lifestyle.
Exactly. And that was done in every way, in every institution of English America's life. It was done in their lost legal system. It was done in their religious system. It was done in their philosophical system. It was done in their medical system. Every walk of human life the English operated, they had to denounce and diminish African people.
Ms. Sean, do you have a question for the professor?
Yes, I do.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Why is understanding the experiences of African American people and African descendants from people across the diaspora?
I'm sorry, say that last part again. I didn't hear that.
Okay. Why is understanding the experiences of African American people and African descendant people across the diaspora?
Okay, it goes back again to what I said, is that what Carter Woodson's quote. One of the things that everybody does is that they have to interact with the world. We have to interact in all kinds of different ways. If you take that past from us and corrupt it so that it is not true and that they are missing pieces to it, then your children do not have a blueprint and a pattern to live their life. Because you have to remember that in English America, we were said that we were inhuman, that we
right.
were gorilla, and we came from the ape family. And so if you program into believing that, then you begin to act that in some way. You know, you can't turn a chicken into a dog. You can't do that. The dog has his own history. He has his own process. Farmer attempts to make the dog cluck instead of bark. You know, he lives a very confused life for his total existence and where he is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what is our story the American story?
That's
or is just
American
a part of? It's America's story. Our story is our story, America's story.
Well, really, it's an English story. America was settled by the English.
Right.
They were settled by the English-speaking nations of Europe, which were all Germans. They were Germanic people. They were the Normans. They were the Saxons, the Anglos. They were the Goths, the Visigoths, the Franks, the Normans. All of these German nations is really what compromises the English tongue. And as a result, like right now, we're speaking, you and I are talking English, but that's basically a German language. English is German. And that is the beginning of understanding the attitude and nature of the people that are going to hold us in captivity. Dr. John Henry Clark said, you got to study the history of your captors.
Right. I remember him when he said that. And in fact, Dr. Clark got information by Captain Cullen. You know, when Dr. Clark first started out, he just wanted to research African history. And Captain Cullen told him, yo, man, you have to study other people's history, especially the enemy.
That's right. You have to do that. Everybody does that. You study your enemy.
Yes.
And you can understand why they hold
study him. Don't become like him.
The Europeans, the English got so bad at the one point in the time because they needed to justify slavery. Because slavery and the act of enslavement did not coincide with what they had as a Bible. That Bible, that King James Bible that has the Old Testament and the New Testament, those 66 books of that Bible was called the Bible, did not coincide with what they were doing in terms of captivity. So they had to make sure that they could explain that in terms of what the scripture said. And what
right.
they did is there's one book, very unique book that was written in 1901. And it was written in St. Louis, Missouri. And it was written by a guy named John Carroll. And Carroll had a divinity school. And he wrote this book to use as a textbook at the divinity school. And the name of the book was The Negro, a Beast. And it's still, if you take that and Google it in Amazon Books, you'll find it. It's still there.
And called The Negro what?
The Negro, a Beast. That was actually a textbook that was written in 1901, I think it was, in St. Louis, Missouri, by a guy named Carroll, Carroll. Amazon still has it. What he said in that book, he said, on the morning of creation, there were three things in the Garden of Eden. There was Adam, there was Eve, and there was a snake. So if that's the case, where did the Negro come from? Mm-hmm. He must have been the snake in the Garden of Eden. Now, we all say, well, that's stupid. You know, anybody's going to believe that. But what did I say? The school that he was teaching was a divinity school. And who goes to a divinity school? People that are going to be preachers.
Right.
And when they become preachers, what do? They go back and they start churches and they tell other people that history. And that's what we're dealing with.
Mm. Now, I just want people that are listening to Professor William Rogers, if you have a question or a comment for him, just press 1. Or you could dial 516-531-9540. Just press one and we'll chime you in. Now, it has been said, oh, wow, two people. Okay, let's go to, you got two people that want to ask you questions, Professor.
Okay.
Hold on. 0012, welcome to Black Urban America. You're on the line.
Okay, this is Brother Timothy. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I wanted to ask Dr. Rogers, who I look as a unique professor who anybody could study under and learn. And I feel that I'm one of his students in his classroom at all times. I want to ask him, what was about the, how are you, Dr. Rogers, what was about the African that all civilizations admired what they did, wanted to be like him, but when it came to the European, what was it about him that he wanted to conquer, and not only conquer the African, never let him go out of bondage, all the way up until 2021. Right now, today, people don't even know that they're in mental slavery. They went through shadow slavery physically. But what is it about the African that they turned his, him and her mind around, took what they could from the civilizations, not only took what they took from people of color, but will not let them go today?
And that's a powerful question, because that's at the root of all of the things that we are talking about. The African, something that God gave that culture called melanin. And you got to study it, and its significance and what it can do for, and what it does for the human body. It obviously, we know, gives pigmentation. And why is that important? Well, one of the things that's important is because it's geographical. The African geographically and the human animal geographically is a warm-blooded animal. So wherever it enters the planet, it's going to have to be around heat. And when the African comes into the region of the equator and so forth, you have a temperature structure there that is unbearable unless you have some form of substance that can block the energy from the power of the sun. And melanin does that. That's one thing that the European has always had a problem with, that pigmentation. That's why they lay on the beach all day long and try to look like us.
You ain't lying about that.
They do. But that's okay. You're not going to be pigmented. Pigmentation also has a lot to do with the genius and the brilliance of people. We created civilizations. We taught them. The movement taught the Europeans how to be people.
Right.
They taught them how to wash their butts. They didn't know how to wash, that they were supposed to wash their butts.
They didn't know how to cook their food, neither.
They didn't know how to cook
their food.
Right. So that, Brother Timothy, is one of the things. I mean, we could be here for the rest of the year talking about all the contributions that they would make to the world that people wanted to duplicate and copy.
Okay, you have another caller. 6905. What's your comment or question?
Professor Rogers.
Welcome to Black Urban America.
Yes, I would like to ask Professor Rogers a pertinent question. He mentioned earlier the interplay of the contribution of the black man. Professor Rogers, I guess my question is, would it be safe to say, if we look at places like Egypt, that the black man probably helped develop the origin of science and math as their main contributions in society or civilization?
Yes, indeed. The Kemet, which is what it was called, that whole region that we know today as the Nile Valley, which consists of Kemet, the Nubian culture, and others, and that powerful body of water that flows up into that area called the Nile River, would provide the genius that they would have. And not only would they develop math, science, and some of the other things, the geometry, and some of the other things that we see, but they would also be the basis of religion. Christianity, the one that they practice now in the West, comes out of Africa. And it can be proven. Europeans have proved it. There's a book that was written by a guy from University at, I want to say St. Louis, no, not St. Louis. I mean, I'm slipping right this minute. I'll think of it in a second. But he wrote a book called Egyptian Fire, Hebrew Light. And what he was doing was documenting symbolically and philosophically how ancient Kemet provided a lot of the teachings and the principles that you were going to see what would end up being known as Israel and the Middle East, which there's no such thing as a Middle East, but that's what it would be known of in history. So your right. question is yes. Even to the point of writing, they'll tell us that Europeans invented writing. And that's totally not true. We know that they wrote on papyrus. We've seen the work that the Great Commission's colorization. And some of our scholars who have done the work and the research on that material, John Jackson, Sheikh Antizop, John Henry Clark, who they've done powerful work and researched this. And even the Europeans know this. They know it. But they're not going to teach it. They're not going to tell you that. Because, like I said back earlier, it will not play into the justification of human slavery.
All right. So we're going to take another caller. 001.
Yes. Can you? Yes, yes. Dr. Rogers, another question, sir, and I'm not trying to hog the internet. I appreciate the program. Dr. Rogers, what is it about the African and the people of color? They don't want to release themselves from this beast. I mean, what is it about that they can't come from out beneath this slave political system, this slave educational system, this slave economic system, and want to do for themselves? Have they been that affected physically and mentally? And what direction should we go to get out of this? Because we, in order for us to stay in perpetual motion, Doc, we have to go forward.
Well, my next set of questions was going to address that, but Dr. Rogers, go right ahead.
Okay, that too, Brother Timothy, is a whole discourse. And I mean, we could be here to next year dealing with the depths of that question. But anyway, let's just for the sake of our discussion tonight, let's just take a look at it. It's something that we call internalized oppression that happens to us. And based on all of the oppression that's heaped upon our people over the years. Now, you have to go back and you have to really think what was done in those 247 years that we were held in captivity on the shores of what we call America. And how what the process was and how it took place. And the gravity. One of the things that slavery would do, as I said earlier, it was supposed to be perpetual. It means it was never supposed to end, and it has not ended going on. But the deal was this. It has to be psychologically. Physical is not enough. You have to make the brain. You have to turn the mind. You think about animal husbandry and look at the way an animal – if you're going to train a dog and he's a pit bull, you got to make him like you first. And you usually do that through food, clothing, and shelter. You feed the dog, and he knows that he's supposed to eat from you. And so you can get him to do whatever you want him to do, get him to jump over the fence, stand on his hind leg, do all kind of tricks. Because at that point, you have been conditioned to who you think is the source of your food. And you get so wrapped up into trying to break that, you forget that you are a free individual, that you can do your own. You don't need that. And we haven't been able to do that yet. We haven't broke those chains from my mind. There are chains on your mind.
The psychological chains to slavery. I'm going to change my questioning now, Dr. Rogers. And excuse me, I'm sorry I didn't introduce you as Dr. William Rogers. I know you work hard to get that PhD, and you should be known as Dr. Rogers. How do you feel about the impact of integration on Black folks in America?
Well, it was the worst thing that could have happened. My father taught school for 55 years, mm-hmm. and he taught in segregation during the years of segregation. And when he retired, the schools were just becoming integrated. And so in order to help keep supplementing his income, he decided to do some sub-teaching. And by the time he got ready to do subbing, he ended up going into an integrated school system. And I remember him telling me one time, he said, that is the worst thing that could have ever happened to our children. Because what they're being done, what's being done is that it's not integration. You know, you're just being put into the white system, and the term integration is a way to keep it accepted. You don't learn your own history. They weren't teaching us about ourselves. And if you integrate something, there's usually an equal amount of training from both entities with the interests of both entities. And that didn't happen in integration. That was not what it was supposed to be. Integration was done because America was attempting to become the police of the world.
Right.
And they cleaned their own house. And so around the 1955, during the Eisenhower administration, it was going to be necessary for America to clean its own house. And I know we don't have a lot of time, but let me just tell you this little quick story, and you can
go right ahead. Take your time, doctor. Take your time.
Richard Nixon was the vice president under Dwight David Eisenhower.
Tricky Dick, yeah.
At that time, Russia was coming into power.
Right.
And Russia was being accused of the mistreatment of the Soviet Jews. And mm-hmm. so they sent Nixon to have a meeting with Khrushchev over the mistreatment of Russians. Some of those discussions were called the kitchen debates. It was called the kitchen debates. But anyway, they had this discussion. And so when Nixon started complaining to Khrushchev about how they were mistreating Jews, Khrushchev went down his briefcase and pulled out a whole bunch of pictures of Africans being lynched.
Ooh.
He said, how are you going to come over here and tell me how to treat people, and look at what you're doing to Black folk, to the Negro. Look at what you're doing to them. And the rest of the world began to say that Africans had began to become independent. African nations were getting their independence. And so it was a need to window dress America. So that was what they began to do. Just like now, they're going to have to, with all this police killings and stuff, you had to have a Biden, because they got to now come in here and window dress. They got to clean up stuff.
Right.
Because right now, America is real ugly.
Well, all the issues that Black folks have in America, I'm going to ask this question, then I'm going to let Michonne ask the question. With all these issues that we have, economic, political, and social issues that we have, should Black folks separate? Should we really consider the separation movement?
That has to be a very careful decision. And here's why I say that. One of the things that has happened globally is there has been an attempt to continue over the long since colonization to capture Africa by the Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done that. They've done that in a lot of ways. And like now you got the Chinese in there. And so Africa has had some serious disruptions itself.
Mm-hmm.
They just came out of that the Tutus and the Hoodoos were fighting each other in all far Europe. And you still got those groups there. Now it's the Arab religious wars that are going on over there. So it would make it kind of difficult for a mass movement of Africans to do. Now, let me say this. I do agree that we need to go home. But I'm not so sure that we can do it without a very careful
plan. What I mean by the separation, Dr. Rogers, I don't mean by separation, moving to Africa. I talk about separating ourselves from the American ideology and the American economic system and do for self and have our own businesses and so circulate our own dollars, buy our own property, buy our own land, have our own schools.
Okay.
I talk about that type of separation.
Well, I think the word I would like to substitute the word separation for maroonage. We would have to become maroons. And a maroon is someone that does pull away and set up his own power system. And that power mm-hmm. system has to economically, politically, and socially. And the question becomes is, are we prepared to do that? And if so, how do we do it? Because it has been attempted before. We attempted to build our own communities and pull away. You saw what they did in Tulsa, mm-hmm. Rosewood, Durham, North Carolina. They built highways in there because you don't control the land. You don't own the land. The American system owns the land, so they can always come and take it. So if you're going to do that, you have to do it as a maroonage. You would have to pull away and be quiet about it and do your own thing.
Yeah,
and I think
we got to stop making so much noise if we do these type of movements, we got to stop making so much noise, you know, rallies and marches. We don't need to let our oppressor know what we're doing.
Yeah, see, the backup to that would probably be reparations.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a question about that. Don't go into that. That was going to be my next question after Michonne asked her question. Go ahead, Michonne.
Okay. Why has our sacrifices gone unrecognized in the United States?
It's the respect. They don't have respect for us, just like they don't now. We're still not respected as an independent, free-thinking, free-will people. We're not seen that way by the Europeans and the Euro-American system.
English-America. I like that term, English-America.
And sometimes we play into that, and then sometimes we don't. We go out and spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on white designer clothes, and you know, riding around in $60,000 cars, and can't pay our rent to live in, don't have a house to live in, don't own the place you live, things like that. We play into that, and that's not necessarily a critique per se. It's just simply a part of that internalized oppression system. I have a good friend who calls that, talks about that all the time as being one of the first steps to addressing change is to address internalized oppression. So the answer to your question, though, is that we are not respected politically, socially, and economically in the world. We're not respected that way. We don't have allies. We can't link up with somebody. Even our African brothers, I would be willing to say that's a struggle with them. Linking up with us and respecting us in that way.
Right. I seen that. Yeah. Okay. Since I was going to ask about reparations, you know, there's this big push by ADOS and other movements for reparations. What are your thoughts about reparations? And like, again, I always come from a perspective that we got enough resources we could do for ourselves. And asking for reparation is still, to me, this is my own perspective, you know. If we get reparations, cool. But, you know, look at American history. Do you think American government is going to give us reparations? And why do we keep on going going to the enemy, I should say the enemy, the oppressors, the American government, and asking them for resources.
Right. That's a good way to start with that analogy. That's an excellent book that has recently been written by a brother right there in Atlanta. His name is Brother Reginald Muhammad. And
okay.
They did a study on reparations. And he just came out not a couple of months ago, about a month ago. And he does the whole economic breakdown of the system. It's more of the reasons why and some of the hows of if reparation was going to take place, how it would happen and how it should happen. So the thing is that there's a lot of questions. Should it happen? Yes. Yes, it definitely should happen. There's another book written by Dr. Garrity from out of Duke University, a brother that just did some work on all of that. So, yes, it should happen. It's old. It's due. The world works like that. It works. But like the sister said a few minutes ago, we're not respected to the point where people will sit down at the table with us and begin to talk about it. Then we're not respected that way. Other cultures who go through changes and America gives them reparation is because that they're willing to come to the table and respect them with their culture. So that's one of the first problems that we have.
Other cultures get reparations, even cultures that declare war on the United States. After the war is over, the United States paid them reparation for bombing them.
Exactly.
What's up with that? What's going on with that?
And see, the sister answered the question. They were respected. We're not respected in a way to bring us to the table. And that's why we got to make that. We got to force that. That's on us. That's what Marcus Garvey was trying to tell you. You know, Marcus Garvey said, you know, we had the same with Frederick Douglass. He said, you know, power has to be made with demand. You have to put demand on power. You know, you can't make something happen. You don't demand it. You know, we haven't done that. We haven't put the power. We haven't organized as a structure and forced change. When we do it, we did it for stuff that was, you know, like being able to go in the restaurant and eat with white people or go to the movie with white folk. But that's not economic power.
Right. So that economic power is owning the movie theater, like Magic Johnson. Economic power is owning your own restaurant.
That's exactly right. And that wasn't done. That was one of the challenges to the civil rights movement.
Let me ask you this. You brought up Marcus Garvey. We have schools, streets, especially in New York, named after Marcus Garvey. But you got people like Marcus Garvey, Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm, you know, all these people are not exposed to our children. Why is that? They're not part of the curriculum. Like Dr. Sinema, Dr. Clark, Dr. Wolf. Why are these individuals not Captain Cohen? Why are these individuals? I mean, it's nothing wrong discussing with Dr. King, Booker T. Washington. It's nothing wrong with that. But we have other contributors, not only to American society, but to humanity. But they're not just taught to our children. Why not?
And you saw what happened right there in Atlanta. I can't remember which one of the school district it was. It was the black parents who wanted the school system to stop teaching about slavery. And they wanted to change the curriculum to be more encompassing of the American way. Multicultural kind of thing.
That's the new way of saying white. Multicultural, diversity.
All that stuff. That's just so much full of bunk. But they wanted to change the curriculum. They forced the school district. Black parents did that. And so I think it was Gwinnett County, I believe, did that.
Okay. Gwinnett County is outside of Atlanta, and Gwinnett County was a white county, but Gwinnett County is really slowly turning black and Mexican.
Right. I think they didn't want that. They didn't want that talk. And you go to any, and you know, I'm gonna tell you something else. And you need and think about it. HBCUs.
Right.
Find do a survey and find out how many HBCUs have African American Studies departments, not history departments, not sociology departments. African American. See how many.
And if they do,
only,
if they do, they only have it on the bachelor level. If they do, they'll have it on the master or doctoral level. If you want to get your doctor, if
like
you had, if you want to get your doctor, you're gonna have to go on African American Studies. You're gonna have to go to a white institution. And I did not understand that. I don't understand.
Now, what you will have is you will have a history teacher who's well versed in African American Studies, and they may teach it. It's in the structure, but it's not in the curriculum assessment analysis system. It's not a part of that.
Right.
And so as a result of that, now here's the danger to that. The result of that is you're going to get teachers who are graduating from those institutions going into the public schools who don't have the training. So if you start talking about curriculum, African American Studies curriculum in the public schools, the problem is what teachers are going to be training the teachers. They're going to have to send the teachers back to school.
Right, right.
And get trained in African American Studies. And
right.
They're not going to do that.
Now I see why the curriculum's not changed. Because
exactly.
Our teachers and our principals and our superintendents, whom are Black, don't really have a background of
African-American
history or African-American studies or an analysis of the African-American movement or African. They probably know that they're African. But let me ask you another question, Dr. Rogers. You know, I noticed during the Trump administration, there was an increase of organizing, an increase of people saying we have to start our own business, an increase of talking about Marcus Garvey theories, an increase of talking about Elijah Muhammad theories. Do you feel, due to these elections, all this will stop and Black folks go back to sleep like they did the Obama administration? According to the beginning of the Obama administration, I heard Black professionals say, oh, there's no more racism. Racism is gone until they shot Tremont in Florida. So do you feel with these elections that Black folks going to go back to sleep?
And see, that's what when Brother Timothy asked that question about why is it that we can't change, that's because...
Yeah, he's on the line now. And after I asked this question, I was going to bring him on. But we only got about 11 minutes left. Go ahead, Dr. Rogers.
Yeah, okay, yeah, right. But yeah, these are smoke screens that are used to diminish the ability or the success in being able to do that. The only way you can do that is what I said earlier. You're going to have to make a maroon. We're going to have to start Saturday schools where we run them. We run those schools. We're going to have to get people in the community who are well-versed in African American Studies. And we're going to have to bring them together, teach our children on what we call Saturday weekend schools. But not only for the students, we got to do it for their parents, too.
I was good. That was my next question. Go ahead. Just go on. Just keep going.
I was going to say, we're on the same wavelength. That's why this is so important.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, you want to teach the children, how about teaching the parents this? Because the kids got to go back home.
That's right. They're gonna go back home, and they're gonna ask their mom the question. I don't know. Yeah, go ask your teacher.
I don't care.
You know.
Oh, they know about twerking. Where we going?
And see, this goes back to your original question that we started the program off with: is why is it necessary to teach African American history? This
right.
is the reason. What we talk right now in the last 50 minutes.
Why is it so difficult for Black
people? We have not learned how to do the first principle of Kwanzaa. We have not learned to
Umoja.
Understand
Umoja. Umoja. But here I want to ask you, Dr. Rogers, before you go on. Here I want to ask. How come black liberals, black conservatives, there's nothing wrong with being a liberal, nothing wrong with being a conservative, and even some black progressives, how come they don't embrace the black nationalist movement?
It's getting scared, I think.
Simple, huh?
One
scared.
Man, my opinion. They're scared. They're scared of losing their big paychecks, losing those big houses out there in, Georgia, some big mansions they live in. They're scared of being able to not be able to pay for their bands.
Have a band to believe in the black nationalist movement. You can still have a band and have your own business and property in the black communities and organize in the black community. And
a lot of that's been bought with black folks too. A lot of that's been bought with the blood of our ancestors that put Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola and those breweries in business and Levi Jeans and all these mega multi-billion-dollar corporations, who a lot of these folks are now working in those organizations. They've been able to get into the door a little bit, make a six-figure salary, in some cases seven figures. They don't want to lose that. They don't get there and talk about no modest job and lose that.
Let's bring on your student, Brother Timothy. Go ahead, Brother Timothy.
Yes, my brother. It's a pleasure, sir, with your host and Dr. Rogers. I'm going to say this, that I think, sir, that studying under Elijah Muhammad, like I have studied under some people that I've been blessed to study under, that he taught us something about the white man. I don't think anybody knew the white man like Elijah Muhammad. I swear to God. Nobody knew the white man like Elijah Muhammad.
I will tell you something, Brother Timothy. I'm an old man.
And after seeing
all of these theories for the past 50 years, all these different perspectives, you know, even the ones that we celebrate, Elijah Muhammad was right. Elijah Muhammad was right. And I'm not a Muslim, but I'm heavy influenced by him. You know, I read Message to the Black Man and all that. But Elijah Muhammad was right about doing for self, black business. Marcus Garvey was right to believe in the black God, you know, not that white Jesus, you know. You know, have your own religion. Have your own plan and everything like that.
Exactly. And let me tell you something, brother. Listen to this. Whether we want to stay here or not, psychologically, Elijah Muhammad broke the chains of what we were taught by the white man. That's what he did for Malcolm. He broke white supremacy. He broke white supremacy for Muhammad Ali. He broke white supremacy for Malcolm X. He broke white supremacy for Farrakhan. So I'm going to say this to you. That being up under him and people like him, that we have to understand who our enemy is, man. See, once we realize we're captured and still in slavery, you have to realize that you're still in slavery to get out of it. That's the problem, the perceptions.
Yeah, Dr. Arbach wrote a book about that, breaking the psychological chains to slavery.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something, brother. This is a great program. You know, Dr. Rogers, you've been introduced to a lot of people, and this brother's great. What's your name, sir? What's the host?
My name
is
Kenny Jones. And my
Kenny
co-host,
Jones.
John
and you know
Williams.
What?
And she brought,
and I'm going to tell you something.
This sister is. And let me tell you something, man. Why are you so quiet?
And let me tell you something.
You learn a lot.
And you know
listening.
What?
Oh, okay.
But let me tell you something. And that sister right there, too, with you. This grassroots thing that we have, it is amazing how we're able to keep it. Because we have a lot of pressures that break us up. For some reason, somehow, the truth always comes to the top and the surface. I'm serious.
That's right.
And we need to keep these people going with us because this is going to free us. These conversations, what we build, the directions we need to go in and accomplishing it. We need this.
Right.
We need all this. Yep. All right, I'm going to listen from now on. It's been great.
Okay, every Tuesday, and let me tell you something
about
And let me tell you something about We Talk Productions. We Talk Productions had, I named the programs, and we focus on solutions of black, not just discussing the issues, but how can we defeat these issues? We're black one, we black first, we black always, you know, so we're trying to bring all type of information to our people, and we're not talking about rap music and fashions and who's sleeping with who. These type of discussions and conversations is going to build our people in having a black nation once again. I'm sorry, Dr. Rogers. I was getting ready to go on my soapbox, man.
That's
okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. We only got a couple minutes. My last question to you, and I know it probably takes 20 minutes to define this, but for the people, for my audience's sake, can you define black power?
It is the control of your community, economically, politically, and socially, and control it to a way that everybody that interacts with you believes it and responds to you in that controlling way. And they have to be able to accept it, you know, in a way that there's no way of ever changing it. Power, that's political power. You have to have that kind of position and to be able to establish those institutional pillars, politics, economics, social, and control them in a way that the rest of the world will simply bow at your feet to them.
And to add to that, Dr. Rogers, if you control this, it will better our families, our parents, and our children. And if you improve the family structure, you're on your way improving your community. Dr. Rogers, I want to thank you for coming on the show, man.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me. I enjoyed
this. You know, I really appreciate this conversation. Thank you for tuning in, Brother Timothy. So, thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, folks, that's another week. I enjoyed this conversation. I hope you got something out of it. Thank you very much to Dr. Rogers. And Michonne, what are we talking about tomorrow night?
Polygamy.
Okay. Okay, everyone. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. Download and go to We Talk Production Facebook page. As always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night and God bless.
Hold it now.